Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hello. Hope you're having a nice weekend. This is Chris Bentley, here to welcome you to a special weekend drop of Here and Now Anytime. In addition to our usual weekday afternoon episodes, look for episodes early on Saturday mornings, with news and conversations that give you a fresh perspective on the week's events and help you explore your world. So enjoy this episode while you relax, do some housework, run errands, or whatever it is you're up to right now, and follow Here and Now Anytime so you don't miss any of our episodes Monday through Thursday, and now Saturday mornings. And thanks. Now here's the show.
We've seen, you know, countries give out cash to families. We've seen childcare subsidies. And a lot of this research is kind of mixed, so it doesn't seem like there's a one-size-fits-all solution.
Why the U.S. birth rate is at a record low, and some ideas to help raise it. Saturday, April 26th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, how economics are pushing Americans to have fewer kids. And saving small-town newspapers is a losing battle. But that didn't stop two West Virginians from taking it upon themselves to keep their paper afloat.
We had to learn to live on nothing.
Right.
And it was easier that way if we all lived in one under one roof. You know, together we had enough to live halfway comfortably, I guess.
A lot of ramen noodles, a lot of potato soup.
Yeah, yeah.
That's coming up in about 15 minutes. First, though, ByteDance says despite a new U.S. ban passed by Congress this week, TikTok is not for sale. The U.S. government is ordering the social media app's Chinese parent company to sell it. Lawmakers claim the Chinese government is using TikTok to access the personal data of its American users. But ByteDance says it has no intention of selling. So what does this mean for TikTok's 170 million U.S. users? We asked Dean Ball, a research fellow at George Mason University's Mercatus Center. Dean told Peter O'Dowd, legal challenges are likely.
Okay, so let's run through a few scenarios here. As you said, likely to be very high-profile legal challenges on the grounds, for one, that a forced sale would violate a First Amendment right to free expression. What do you think? Is there an argument to make there?
Yeah, so we actually have a little bit of precedent to draw on here because the state of Montana, about a year ago, passed a similar bill to ban TikTok for all users within the state of Montana. This went to federal court. And the primary challenge that TikTok laid there was based on First Amendment grounds. The judge there did find that TikTok had a compelling First Amendment case. And that litigation is, in fact, still ongoing.
I understand that lawyers are preparing lawsuits by recruiting some of the many millions of influencers and creators on TikTok who make a living on this platform. What does this conflict mean for them and their livelihoods?
Yeah, well, I think there really are two questions here. When it comes to the First Amendment aspect, there's TikTok's First Amendment rights. Companies in the United States do have constitutional rights. And then there are the users of TikTok's constitutional rights to express themselves on the TikTok platform. Now, the practical truth is that companies like YouTube and Meta via Instagram have competing products that are very similar to TikTok, that I think a lot of these folks will probably migrate to. But there will certainly be a lot of people whose livelihoods are impacted by this, a lot of Americans.
Let's get to some of these practical questions. Let's say the lawsuits fail, the ban goes through. How does that play out? I mean, would the app just vanish from app stores and it would be impossible to access in the United States?
So what would happen would be that you would no longer be able to download the TikTok app on the U.S. App Store. Now, if you have the TikTok app on your phone, it's not going to go away, even after the ban goes into effect. In reality, I would expect that TikTok will deactivate the service in compliance with the U.S. law. But in theory, they could not do that, and the app would still work, but there'd be no way to update it, to do things like bug fixes, software updates, things like that. So eventually, the app would break either way.
Yeah, we know China says it will not sell. But on the other side of that, who would be interested and able to buy TikTok?
It's a great question. It doesn't have to necessarily be an American company. The bill only requires that it be divested to somebody who is not part of a foreign adversary country. I would think that the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, and other federal regulators would not look kindly on a company like Meta, Facebook, or Google, or Microsoft buying this company, because these companies already have a lot of power. But again, the Chinese have also said that they don't plan to sell, or ByteDance has said that it has no plans to sell the app. That could change.
It's so interesting. We're talking about a social media platform that's, you know, known for its more than its, you know, funny dances, of course, by now. But it's raising really big, important questions, because up until now, the U.S. government has largely left the management of the internet up to large firms like Apple, Google. Do you think what we're talking about, this law, could fundamentally shift who has authority to govern the internet?
I do. I think that this is the beginning, potentially, of a sort of a new stage in the governance of the internet. Right now, as you say, Apple and Google exert a lot of power. While a lot of politicians have expressed anger over the amount of power that Apple and Google have over their app stores in particular, this bill relies on that power in order to exercise the bill's mechanism. It would be much, much harder for this ban to actually work in practice if we had a regulatory system similar to what the European Union just set up with the Digital Markets Act. These are ideas that would require Apple and Google to allow people to download apps outside of the App Store mechanism through third-party app stores or directly from a website. And that might be great for competition and freedom, but there's a security trade-off to be sure. And this bill kind of hits that pressure point precisely, I think.
Dean Ball is a research fellow at George Mason University's Mercatus Center, talking about the future of TikTok for the 170 million people in this country who use the platform. Dean, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Americans are having fewer kids than they used to. The birth rate, which just hit a record low, is a function of a lot more than biology, though. After the break, Scott Tong speaks with a demographer about how the economy shapes family planning. Stick around.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares Betterment's philosophy on investing.
No matter the amount of money you have, it's always good to be invested. It's always good to start early. It's always good to save. And the power of being consistent in your habits is really the path to long-term wealth.
Get started at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
The birth rate for American women has hit a record low, 1.62 births per woman, according to new data from the CDC. It's not a new trend. Birth rates in this country have been falling for a decade, as have those for other large democracies and rich countries. Let's talk about why and what the implications are with demographer Allison Gemmel. She's professor of population, family, and reproductive health at Johns Hopkins University. Professor, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
This is the lowest birth rate since U.S. officials started measuring it in the 1930s. We often hear about American women having more career options and delaying children. Is that part of what's going on?
Yeah, I think that's still part of the story. But I think what I'm a little concerned about with recent trends and the way that things are going with the U.S. economy is that maybe economic concerns are going to be preventing some of those people who might have been delaying from delaying even further. We know that once people delay until their late 30s, they may run into trouble getting pregnant or having an additional child. So the jury's still out, but that might be part of the story now too, unfortunately.
Things like, you know, I can't afford a house, I can't afford childcare, I have student loans, all of those economic questions.
Definitely. We see those rise to the surface time and time again. Yeah. And, you know, I read the comment section of different news articles and I see so many people cite those concerns. I mean, we have some data on this, but I think, you know, we need a little bit more information from the research world about this. But definitely, I think those economic concerns are front and center right now.
As far as the data we do have, who is having fewer babies? Is it white collar or blue collar women, younger, older? Are there demographic slices to pay attention to?
Yeah, I think the big story is the story of age. It's really younger women that are not having kids in the way that they did maybe 20, 30 years ago. We know that teen pregnancy or teen birth has been falling for quite some time, and now we're seeing that people in their early 20s aren't having as many kids as they used to. So the biggest one is going to be age here. And then in terms of other demographic groups, it seems like just in general, there's just lower fertility or lower birth rates in a lot of other demographic groups across the board. And again, it's probably because of all those concerns. And then the people that can afford to have kids might be those, you know, with those stable jobs, have their ducks in a row. So that's probably where we're going to see people having kids the most.
So the implications here, what happens if we have fewer young people working, paying taxes into the system relative to the growing number of retirees from, say, the baby boom generation?
That's the central concern for many people right now. So what can happen is something called population aging, where you just have a growing aging population that you need to support with programs like Social Security. There's lots of different solutions potentially on the board on how to solve this. Not everybody's going to be happy with every solution. Immigration is one, for example, or raising the retirement age. But it's just really hard to get people to have births when, you know, there's a lot of these concerns right now. So it's not an easy thing to solve, unfortunately.
What are we seeing? The United States is not the only country facing these demographics. What are we learning about what it means for seniors in many, in the U.S. and other countries in general? Are many of them having to retire later? Or, you know, I've read about Japan, that since there aren't enough young people to take care of some of them, they're relying on machines and robots for some of their services.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to be kind of innovative in the way that we think about supporting older people. But I'm actually optimistic that we're going to come up with some really interesting innovations, hopefully, to do that. We'll learn from other countries. Other countries are much further ahead in this kind of transition to an aging population. So that's some good news on the horizon. But I think, you know, we're just going to have to put our heads together and figure out, you know, again, innovative solutions to this problem.
Have any countries been able to turn this trend around, somehow encourage more women to have more babies? Does it work?
Not usually. We've seen, you know, countries give out cash to families. We've seen childcare subsidies. And a lot of this research is kind of mixed, so it doesn't seem like there's a one-size-fits-all solution. That said, we do think that providing more support to people, you know, when they're in this important life stage of having kids, probably will pay off in the long run. So we want to make sure that people feel like they are secure, that they have, you know, resources to support having kids. Maybe that means, you know, paid family leave, subsidizing childcare. But again, it's not a one-size-fits-all type of solution.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, before we let you go, when you saw this number come out, how did you react? Surprise? No surprise?
Oh, not surprised at all. This is just continuing this longer-term trend of declining birth rates in the country. I'm not sure when it will reverse. I think we're going to see this for some years to come.
Allison Gemmel is demographer with Johns Hopkins. Professor, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, does your hometown or your current town have fewer newspapers than it used to? The answer is most likely yes. Since 2005, the U.S. has lost nearly 2,900 newspapers and 43,000 journalists, according to research from my alma mater, the Medill School of Journalism. It's especially bleak in rural places. When we return, Scott introduces us to a story out of Welch, West Virginia, where an ill-fated effort to save the local paper shows what's lost when a town doesn't have local news. That's after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Grammarly. 96% of users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions to help your team make their point and move faster. Make a bigger impact at work. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly, easier said, done.
It has been a bleak year in the news business. In January, more than 500 journalists lost their jobs. The LA Times, Business Insider, and NBC News have all laid off staff recently. Public radio has not been immune either. While layoffs in big cities make the big headlines, it's also happening in smaller places. More than half the counties in America now have little or no source of local news. One of those places is McDowell County in West Virginia, deep in the heart of coal country. Reporter Todd Melby visited McDowell County to meet the woman who did everything she could to save the paper there.
Missy Nestor grew up in Ekman, in the southern part of West Virginia. Nestor says it's not a city or even a town. It's pretty much at the mouth of a small valley.
In the holler I grew up in, kind of the first rite of passage was to be able to go outside of the gated fence to get the newspaper from the box.
Born in 1966, Nestor says newspapers have always been a big part of her life. Her mom taught her how to read using the comic pages of the Welch News. When she got older, her dad had this advice.
Always read the legals. That is what you want to know is the legal section, because you want to know what these coal companies are doing and which mountain they're getting ready to blow the top off of and if it's going to affect you or not.
In high school, she worked on the school newspaper. At the Welch News, her first job was in sales. Then she got promoted to publisher. Later, in 2018, the out-of-town owner threatened to shutter the paper if he couldn't find a buyer. So Nestor wrote him a check. I met up with Nestor in downtown Welch.
So now we can see your building. 1927, Welch Daily News.
The building was built in 27. The Welch News was here before that. I'll take you up and see the equipment and everything.
And coming down the street here is a truck. It looks like a semi of some sort.
Yeah, it's a coal truck. That's a coal truck running. And those are 24 hours a day here. And if you're from the county, you love to see coal running.
In the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, McDowell County was a popular place. America needed coal, and McDowell County had a lot of it. By 1950, 98,000 people lived in the county. It was so crowded in downtown Welch, folks called it Little New York. Today, McDowell County's population is just 19,000 people. We head inside so Nestor can show me around the newspaper building. It's chilly. The heat's been off for some time.
Well, let me take you to the back where we laid out our actual pages. This is our camera where we would lay the pages out on the big old cards with wax, old school.
Is this how you were doing it up until the paper stopped a year ago?
Yes. And we didn't have really the equipment we needed anymore to do that, and we just made our way. And it is that way a lot when you're in a newspaper like this, where you're hanging on for dear life and running on 50-year-old equipment or better.
The printing press was old, too. The previous owner bought it the same year Nestor was born, 1966.
You know, a lot of people might look at our newspaper and print it on this old equipment and be like, oh, it's not as clean, it's not as crisp. and it's not, but man, is it historic.
Nestor clearly loves newspapers, the physical, actual newspapers that roll off the press. But don't get the idea that she's stuck in the past. After she bought the Welch News, she took the paper online.
Traffic in Welch, y'all. Just giving you a little shot of it.
And when something noteworthy happened, she'd whip out her phone and go on Facebook Live.
So for anybody just tuning in, apparently this truck was on its way up to the federal prison, and his GPS directed him to come up by the courthouse and go over Hobart Street.
The truck got stuck on one of Welch's many narrow streets. In the end, Nestor's stuck semi video attracted more than 7,000 comments. But Nestor didn't do everything at the paper. A young guy named Derek Tyson served as reporter and editor. He was working at the paper before Nestor bought it, back in 2018 when the previous owner let everybody know that he was going to shut down the Welch News if he didn't find a buyer. Tyson says the phones lit up.
Couldn't even get our work done for the phone calls and the people stopping in crying. But there was one lady in particular who called and said that she only had two things in her life, her telephone and the Welch News, and that she didn't know what she was going to do without us. With the big hearts that we have, that those words gnawed into our very soul. And that we realized, you know, there were a lot of very less fortunate people that were going to get hurt if we ceased to exist.
So they came up with a plan. Nestor would buy the newspaper, and its small staff would stay on because they didn't want to see it die. Nestor offered the owner $30,000. He refused, saying it wasn't enough. Months went by, but there were no other bidders. In the end, Nestor got the paper for $30,000.
We were coming with dreams. We want to cover this thing. We want to be creative. We did a little magazine. We took us online.
Nestor never dreamed of working at a big newspaper in a big city. Owning the Welch News was a perfect fit for her.
It's more about my home and what I want here. I want people to understand how important it is to vote here. I want people to understand how important it is to know what our Board of Education is doing, even if you don't have kids in school, because that's still the public funds going to that system. I want to know about it, you know?
That curiosity led her to pursue a lot of stories, including publishing the salaries of public officials in the paper.
I just went down a list of all the public information of the rate of pay yearly for commissioners, prosecuting attorney, you know, whatever list I had. Whew! I'm stirring up trouble telling everyone how much money people are making.
With Nestor in charge, Tyson says it changed the way he worked.
I was free then to actually be a journalist. You know, I could show some of the harder things to talk about in the community, like the school closures and things like that, because I suddenly had an owner who wanted me out there.
A couple of years after buying the Welch News, Nestor learned a newspaper in a neighboring county was about to close. So, in 2020, she bought the Pineville Independent Herald for a dollar. Since she already owned a printing press and had a hardworking staff, she figured it wouldn't be too much trouble. But then COVID hit, and print subscriptions nosedived by nearly 40%. Ad revenue dropped, too. The added digital revenue couldn't make up for the lost income. To cut costs, Nestor, Tyson, and another staffer lived as roommates in a house Tyson had inherited.
In order to keep the machine turning, we had to learn to live on nothing.
Right.
And it was easier that way if we all lived in one under one roof than, you know, to try to all of us pay separate utilities and make no money, you know. At least over there it was one pot. You know, together we had enough to live halfway comfortably, I guess.
A lot of ramen noodles, a lot of potato soup.
Yeah, yeah.
Money became so tight, Nestor stopped paying herself a salary. With no income, she couldn't help Tyson out with the rent or groceries. Meanwhile, Tyson was making $9.25 an hour. Eventually, it just became too much. Nestor and Tyson published the last issue of the Welch News in March 2023. Steve Waldman is president of the nonprofit Rebuild Local News. He says a lot is lost when local news goes away.
You start with the accountability issues. Like, literally, no one is watching the government. And anecdotally, we know that when that happens, corruption goes up. Actually, taxes go up because no one's minding the store and government gets more inefficient.
When newspapers first started closing in big numbers, some observers shrugged.
We kind of thought, okay, well, the old newspapers are going to go away, but they'll be replaced by a new thing, a website that covers the school board or the counties. In most places, that's not happening.
Back in Welch, Ida Monroe is still shook by the closing of the Welch News.
It messed with me. In fact, the employees here that I work with, they say, you are sick about that, aren't you? I say, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Monroe is 75 and works at a community service agency. A co-worker sometimes brings her a paper from Bluefield, Virginia, but that paper doesn't have much Welch or McDowell County news.
There has been people that has passed, and I didn't know it. It's a hardship for people in this county.
Monroe says knowledge about the place she and the people she loves is critical. For Here and Now, I'm Todd Melby.
This story is part of a podcast, Us and Them, from West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and it was supported by a grant from the Pulitzer Center.
By the way, this week we also had a conversation about local news with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. He talked about a new budget item in New York State that allocates $30 million a year in tax credits to local newsrooms.
It dwarfs the kinds of investment you've seen elsewhere. This is a huge different approach. It does not encompass new not-for-profit outlets, and there are going to be those who argue it should. But it does seem a first step to argue that we all have, as citizens, a stake in the conveyance of news. And this is a way they're trying to do it, where they're not picking and choosing the winners, whether or not they like the coverage that they might see ensue.
You can hear that whole conversation and a lot more at hereandnow.org. And while you're there, check out all the reporting Peter and I did for our Reverse Course series, looking at transportation climate solutions from battery electric semi-trucks.
So it's just like a ginormous golf cart.
To wind-powered cargo ships in Costa Rica.
Shipping, and I'm saying that meaning literally ships, vessels moving goods, is still off in the background in most people's minds.
We're going to continue covering climate, and you can keep up with that series, Reverse Course, by following this podcast wherever you're listening to it right now. Thanks. That's our show for today. Here and Now Anytime comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Sam Rafelson, Thomas Danielian, and Chico Theodi. Today's editors were Julia Corcoran, Eileen Balinski, Micaela Rodriguez, Michael Scotto, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Caleb Green. Mike Moschetto also wrote our theme music, along with Max Liebman and me, Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin, and the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be back with you on Monday.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the NPR Wine Club. NPR Wine Club members have contributed over $1.5 million to helping create a more informed public. B21, join the charge at nprwineclub.org/podcast. Support for NPR and the following message come from Bombas. Bombas makes absurdly soft socks, underwear, and T-shirts. And for every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness. Get 20% off your first purchase at bombas.com/NPR and use code NPR.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.